Welcome to the Story Powers Podcast, the show about the power of stories, the people who tell them, and why you should be doing it too. I'm your host, keynote speaker and storytelling coach, Francisco Mafus. My guest today is Peter Tellefsdal. Peter is a former political advisor who is now a senior partner at a Norwegian PR agency. As an author, speaker, and consultant on clear communication, Peter helps brands connect with their audiences by telling better stories. His TEDx talk about his story of repentance and discovering grace has been viewed by more than 1.7 million people and counting. Now he's on a mission to help Christian organizations make the church relevant to modern audiences through better message clarity, storytelling, and marketing. Now, I need to be honest here. I'm a heathen. So when I was doing my research for this episode, all this talk about Jesus and the church was making me a little uncomfortable. But then I found one quote in Peter's new book that changed everything for me, because that quote was from me. Now, anyone who considers me an expert enough to put me in their book is someone I just can't fight too much with. Ladies and gentlemen, Peter Tellefsdal. Peter, welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot.
Although I must say, I think you might have slightly misquoted me, just because I don't think I ever used the word merely, because the quote in the book is, a story is a real life example that makes a point, which is usually how I say that. Now, it's not beyond the realm of possibility that I would have actually said a story is merely a real life example that makes a point, but it doesn't sound much like me, so who knows?
Yeah, I get your point, but still, I think I highlight your wisdom there as a really crucial one for all the storytellers out there. So I think still, even though I've been slightly paraphrasing you, I still think it's a good point.
That is fair. I think you're allowed to paraphrase me and change what I'm saying. That is okay. So as we were just talking about before I recorded, how I occasionally do things to be provocative when I'm on social media or whatever. And I considered having a go at you, not go, but having a needled start to this podcast by saying how you often refer to the Bible and Jesus' story in particular as the greatest story ever told, and asking if maybe we shouldn't refer to that as the greatest fiction story ever told. And then I realized that although there is something I want to talk to you about, I don't care that much for the purposes of this conversation. And I don't think that's the most interesting thing. If the story of Jesus and a lot of the stuff that's in the Bible, if it is historically accurate or true or not, but I am interested in what changes if it is or if it isn't. Because there's one line in your book, which is not from you, it's from one of the interviews you mentioned, which says, if the story of Jesus is true, it's a disaster when people don't know it or don't care to know. But my first question is, why does it have to be true? Or why does it have to be true completely? Right? Because, you know, there's some magical elements in there that I think is the bits that most people struggle with, you know, the turning water into wine and resurrection, all this stuff. Why do they have to be true?
Yeah, well, because, you know, to go straight to the core message, the resurrection of Jesus Christ, like, or the claim of the resurrection of Jesus Christ, you don't have to believe it, but that's that physical historical event is actually the very thing that differs Christianity from all other religions and system of thoughts, kind of philosophy that the world has ever seen or known. So if you make that just a symbolic event, or don't take that literally, or is a metaphor or something, you basically remove the premise for the whole Christian belief. So that's why I really make an argument in my book if you are vague and unclear and tell vague stories about the factual historical events surrounding the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus Christ, then you're really on a bad communication path, because you're removing yourself from the very premise and core message of Christianity that you base everything on. So Jesus actually is a very radical claim that Jesus gave, and that like he presented himself as true God and true human being, like combined. So he was a madman, seriously, nutcase, or if it is true, it changes everything. And I happen to believe the last thing, and I think the church is not too convincing in their communication about that very fact to a modern audience today. So that's the basis of my engagement, because I was actually transformed personally from this story myself a few years ago. So I entered the story myself, and that's why I was so eager to tell the story to other people.
I think that's an interesting position, and what I don't want to do is get into a theological discussion, because I don't think that's really the point, that I'm not clearly qualified to have that discussion. I'm not sure if you are. I don't know who is qualified to have these discussions. It is an interesting way of looking at things when it comes to messaging and storytelling, because take for example Buddhism, right, which is a religion I have sympathy for. And one of the things that I always liked is, I don't know, because I grew up in Brazil, my family was Catholic, and there's a lot of stuff about it that I disliked, including my aunt always licking her thumb and doing the cross on my forehead, like she still tries it, and I hate it to this day. And there was a lot of stuff that to me as a kid just felt silly and very hard to buy into. And then I remember when I came across Buddhism, one of the things that they say, one of the main messages is like, you don't need to believe any of the stuff we're saying, because most of the things we are talking about are things that you can test for yourself. You know, that this is a way to live. And if it works for you and brings you, you know, less suffering, which is essentially the core message of Buddhism, then that's fine, that it works for you. And that's the only thing you really need to believe in. And I think it's interesting because arguably, when it comes to messaging, there is so much good stuff that was radical in his time and now is considered, you know, how most illuminated people try to live. But your argument is, no, you can't just use that. You can't use the love each other and we are all the same and all the stuff that arguably started with Jesus. You have to have an element there that can only be taken on faith, because you can technically prove it. You might be able to, in a way, prove it historically, but you can, you know, we're not going to see anybody resurrected in day now to make sure that that can happen. So I find it interesting that is the position you were taking.
Yeah. But I mean, it's like, you don't have to take my word for like, there is actually a need today, because like the many of the values we base the liberal democracy on, that is really kind of in a dangerous position in the States now for sure, but also in parts of Europe, right? So like the inviolable human rights, the like equality of gender, everything, like things we take for granted, that is actually under pressure in large parts of the world. And Tom Holland and lots of other like historians that I have made arguments like, okay, to a certain extent, we can remove ourselves from the sources of those values. But at some point, when we don't longer remember where we got those values from, what was the base of that values, then we're in great danger. And I believe to some extent, we are in some parts of the Western world, we are at that point now, that we have to actually try to get back to the roots and try to recall, okay, where did those ideas actually come from? And I, in my opinion, Jesus Christ was the most prominent spokesperson for some of the values we actually hold the most dear and that we base our liberal democracies on. So even though if you kind of don't give a S about or F, S or F, about him as a kind of his claims of being divine and stuff like that, even though as a historical person, his I mean, it's so crucial to know his ideas, to know how he met people in his time and how that affected basically the whole Western civilization. And I am so kind of a, I'm not a missionary. I'm a PR guy. I'm a marketing guy. So I just happen to be transformed by this story. I think it's the greatest story ever told. So I'm just curious why for so many people, this very strong story that has actually power to form a civilization seemingly is irrelevant or even out of touch or even worse, dangerous in many people's eyes today. I find that's super interesting. And I don't think churches in general do a very good job of kind of closing that gap.
My take on that is that perhaps the problem is that although the core message of that story is a very powerful one, is one that still resonates, it's one that a lot of people, you know, it's a story a lot of people would like to be a part of. There's a few different issues in there, and you touch on some of them in your book. So one of them is that message has been massively muddled. So instead of whenever you interact with someone who's representing that particular faith, it's not, you know, we are all the same, we all need to love each other and that sort of thing. That is not the message that comes through. There's lots of other messages that come through, and a lot of those messages are very negative. So, you know, so that's problem number one, you know, messaging is lacking, that message lacks clarity. The other thing is that there's a lot of context that or baggage that comes with the message that to a lot of people is difficult to separate from. You know, like you might actually love the message. You might actually think that the Bible itself is a super interesting text. There's lots of wisdom in it and all that. But you just don't like organized religion. You know, it doesn't need to be even Christianity. It just be like organized religion. And because to a lot of people, you can't separate one thing from the other, then the message becomes either even harder to accept or consider, or they just don't get it, right? Just because there's too much noise, and the signal, which should arguably would be the most compelling thing, is just not there, right? It's just drowned out. So that's my, I mean, without getting into the specifics about why people might dislike Christianity as a particular religion, I think with any religion that's the case, right? And it's one thing that I don't think this is intentional. Right? I know that Buddhists complain about this, but like what the mindfulness movement did to a lot of stuff that was considered to be Buddhist wisdom was that they got what they believed was the core message. They ignored everything else and they said, here's some ideas and here's some practices that will improve your life. And let's just ignore all this other stuff about karma and resurrection and all this stuff, which a lot of Buddhists don't like. A lot of Buddhists think this is like Buddhist light is not, that's not what it's, you know, there's more to it than that. But unarguably, to a lot of people, that has worked. Like they caught onto the message, and a lot of them end up getting more interested in the other stuff after.
Well, you're totally right about it. Like at least the younger generation have been really skeptical, with good reason, I would say, to organized religion. So actually, churches like the Christian churches that I kind of approach are with my book and messaging is really they have a branding problem. Really a branding problem. So because at least it could be argued if it was Jesus actually who gave the church their brand. So the church's job is to manage the brand that Jesus gave the church. And I argue that the brand the church got from Jesus was to be a force for good in the world, like a force of radical love and grace in a world that desperately needs just that. And I totally agree that this is, with a few exceptions, obviously, because there are a lot of Christians doing lots of great work out there, lots of preachers doing a great job communicating the core message. But like the overall reputation and perception of the church is kind of the opposite of what the original brand promise is. So there is a huge branding problem facing the church today. And so that's why what I, as a marketing guy, that makes me curious. And I truly believe that it's something you can do something with. Having a communication branding problem is actually, as long as you have a good message in the first place, that's actually good news because there's something you can do about it. If you have a shit message in the kind of as a basis, then you basically have a really big problem. But in my opinion, what we need to do now is radically rediscover the greatest story ever told. So it's basically not coming up with a new strategy or a new communication strategy or marketing strategy or whatever. It's actually in many ways, the opposite. Just getting rid of a lot of stuff that has made this muddy, foggy, the whole core message, nobody knows what it is. In my book, I describe kind of two ditches that the church has gone into. One is I call it the chameleon church, that is kind of trying to be relevant by kind of, I don't know, it's not my point to make fun of stuff, like sort of having all this mindfulness yoga services, you have these, let's not talk too loud about Jesus because then we get associated with all this stuff we don't like. And so talk about the creator because that's less personal. And let's not talk about too much about sin because that's offensive to people. So, and all it's kind of, so you're basically, what you're doing is saying, I don't believe in my own story. So I'm telling you another story just to make you come and be a member in our community. But nobody knows what you're for. If you're in a humanitarian organization or whatever, nobody can differ you from nobody understands what's your unique value proposition. And as an organization, that's a really bad position to be in. And it makes even the priests, and I talk with a lot of priests in kind of that ditch, they're really confused themselves about their own mission. And you shouldn't be in a church, I believe.
It's interesting to consider, to think about Jesus and the church in modern marketing and branding terms, in the sense that it's a little bit like, you know, let's say Steve Jobs had come up with the iPhone, right? And then that was the only thing he came up with. And then, you know, he passed. And, you know, 5 years later, 10 years later, 20 years later, 30 years later, the types of things Apple is selling are completely different than what he came up with, okay? Maybe the Mac is, if the original Mac is a better example. Like, he came up with this thing, but there was no company at the time. Like, they didn't have marketing channels. They didn't have any. They had a product right at the beginning. They didn't have a way to distribute it, really. There was nothing. There was no marketing plan. There was some idea of what the brand was potentially going to be. But then 100 years later, 200 years later, there's a chance that whatever Apple is doing has no similarity anymore to what was the original thing. And then, like, at best, you have an original brand that might or might not work anymore. And you have to believe that the product is still good. In this particular case, I think you could argue that the product is still very good. The product still has a lot of transformational power, but the brand has gotten muddied. All the marketing channels they invented, I mean, I'm not saying they're wrong, but they weren't there to begin with. Like, there was no church when Jesus was around. So chances are he wouldn't have set it up this way. So I think from a marketing point of view, from a clarity point of view, I think it does beg the question sometimes, if you have a product that's really good, or at least it's good enough for millions of people, so it's more than enough. It's more than a viable product. There's no question about it. But you're not being able to reach new audiences, or you're losing your customer base. Could the problem be into how you're distributing this product and not in the product itself?
Yeah, I truly believe there's really nothing wrong with the product, to use that term. If Christianity is the product, I believe the product is...
No, I think salvation is the product. Acceptance and salvation are the product. again, you could argue that that's the benefits that it gives to its audience. Yeah. I think Christianity, because Christianity didn't exist when Jesus was around, right? That
Jesus wasn't a Christian, right?
There you go. So the product, I mean, the product could be the words, right? The gospel. But what the product does is acceptance, is grace, salvation, all this stuff. That is still valid, I would argue. How you deliver that has probably not been done in the way that works now, the way it has once worked. So it's a message issue there.
When I speak with marketing people about Christianity, because I've been discussing this topic with Christian leaders, obviously, and interviewing people in the work of my book, but I also been kind of discussing this with marketers and branding people and stuff like that. And there is a guy called Dwight Jusen in the States that is a branding. He's a really worked with a lot of the largest brands in the States, actually. And he says, if Christianity were my client or the church were my client, I would say, like, obviously they have a branding problem, so we have to do something about it. But if I were to describe Christianity's core or main value proposition to kind of the audience, it would be three things, he said: grace, grace, and grace. That's it. That's the secret sauce, he called it, of Christianity that makes this unique and differs from all other messages out there. So as long as you are going in your communication way in other direction than kind of focusing on whatever grace means for modern audiences, then you're kind of muddling your core message. And so really, Christianity is maybe perceived today as a kind of a political, it's very politicized. Either you're a liberal kind of Democrat-ish kind of Christian that can't believe it's even possible to be a Republican kind of evangelical voting for Trump kind of Christian. As they are like aliens from each other, even though they actually are supposed to believe in the same core message. So we have kind of, instead of, because being a Christian is having your main identity in Christ, in Jesus Christ. That is being a Christian. And trying to live like he did, trying to be more like him, that's what it means to be a Christian. And as long as you kind of don't focus your messaging around that, it also, the message don't have the transformational power that it used to have. Like in different phases of the church's history, there has been movements that has really affected the society, like Christians following Christ and then shaping society they lived in. But that doesn't seem to be the case today. And I think that's sad. I think actually it's the opposite in many, actually Christians today in many parts of the world are living in ways that leads to polarization and in many cases hatred. And that's the opposite of the intention of the founder of the brand.
One thing that I was thinking about trying to just take us slightly away from theology and slightly more into the storytelling side is, it seemed to me, and again, not being a Christian myself and not having studied this, I might just be completely wrong here, but there was an interview you have there with Donald Miller, very famous for StoryBrand. And one of the things, I think when you ask him what's the core message of Christianity, I think what he said was that the core message is connecting people with God or giving a connection with God. And I read that and I thought, yeah, I can see how in some parts of the world, and in America this might be truer than in other places, that might actually make sense. But I was just questioning myself if this wasn't one of those typical issues where people are trying to sell a solution and not sell the problem that is actually relatable. Because sure, I imagine some people might feel that they don't have a connection with God, right? Or at least with a higher power. But I would be very surprised if the vast majority of people that end up finding their way into any religion, particularly the Christian one, if that is what they relate to. So I'm not saying that that core message is wrong, but to me, if the communication revolves around that, and I'm just someone who feels lost, who feels like I'm not good enough, who feels like there's more to life than this, and I don't get what I'm doing in this world, I don't think that that message necessarily, you know, for me, it doesn't resonate at all. Because to me, you're offering me a solution that I don't know if I want. So, and as I was just thinking in terms of, and I understand the whole watering it down, and I don't think that you need to have, or you can have Christianity without Jesus Christ. But isn't this a case where if you only talk about Jesus and about God and about that stuff that is very specific to religion, you risk trying to sell a solution when people just want their problems fixed?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And I that is actually also what I observe when I study and analyze kind of websites, for example, for churches. And I try to go into that kind of market now to analyze kind of the marketing collateral, communication channels churches use to communicate to kind of externally. And that is like many other organizations, by the way, we see that all the time. You see that all the time. Like, we talk about ourselves, us. We do this, we deliver that, and come to us. And we talk about ourselves a lot in our communication and marketing. And especially important for churches to spend time actually being curious, talking with kind of people outside your community to try to learn more about the actual problems, the actual worries, the actual needs, dreams, longings that people have, that hopefully the church and the gospel can be an answer to or a solution to. Because when I grew up, I thought Christianity was a really bad idea when I was a younger man than I am now. So the story I heard from when I grew up was something like, Peter, you have to stop doing most of the things you like the best. You should be a little bit more ashamed of yourself. And even if you pull yourself together, there's still a good chance you're on the path to hell. So that was a story it was very, very easy to rebel against. I did, like most of the kids in my generation, because it wasn't interesting. It gave no relevant answers to whatever we thought were important in life. So, but then when I actually got to see what the gospel is all about, and when I discovered grace a few years ago, is a long story. I tell about that in my TEDx talk. That was the gospel speaking to deep actual problems I had in my life, in my everyday life at that point. And the gospel was a really relevant answer to those actual problems I had in my life now. So then after I experienced that, and that is the only way I could actually accept and kind of wanting to be a part of that story. That was the only way in. When I understood that this could actually have something kind of tangible meaning to my actual life. So this whole philosophical, I think that maybe the I don't know if I can say the right word, the apologetics, or like the more like making an argument for the Christian faith, like mostly to the brain. To some people that is important. It may be still important to do that kind of work, but to me, it's more about actually trying to name real concerns, real problems that people have, and how the gospel can relate to those issues. Because if I can't do that, I don't think I can communicate the core message of the gospel to a modern audience. So the church needs to be curious, to do some more work, to try to name and actually put some good words and descriptions to actual problems of people outside. There, it's so easy to be in our own bubble. And probably that's even more so with social media now, because churches also go into their echo chambers and digital tribes and stuff like that. So
to me, this is kind of a slightly circular argument, but I find that the biggest, I mean, apart from disliking organized religion and all of this stuff, what a lot of religions seem to have as a messaging problem is, to me, a lack of relatability. Because they're coming from a set of beliefs that is so far removed from the way most people see the world, or at least a lot of people see the world these days, that if you're asking me to, in a sense, if you're asking me to buy into all of it, to buy into some of it, it's a hard sell. And this is why to me, I get how it's a part of the message that we can't completely and shouldn't eliminate. But in my mind, again, you know, I would be the worst person in the world to try and fix this problem. But the way I would probably try to fix this problem, not being Christian, is saying, okay, what are all the problems that our audience has that we feel we have a solution for? So let's talk to them about the problems they have and let slowly lead them to our solution. But we wouldn't lead with the solution. And again, in the church, people know what the solution is, right? Nobody's going to be fooled they shouldn't be fooled, that, again, that you can just do all of the stuff that the church is trying to do without any faith whatsoever. I know that is the case with like some strains of Judaism, where they're like, well, I don't really care if you don't. It's more about the traditions and about the practices and about all this stuff. Christianity is not like that. And I don't think anyone is under any impression that they are. So it's like, you know what the solution is. Let's just not talk about it for a bit. Ignore the huge cross in the background, but let's talk about your problems. And then, you know, at least if you're trying to bring people back in or bring new people in, I struggle to wrap my head around how that wouldn't be the most appropriate way to lead that. But one of the things you said earlier, and I think this is on your book as well, but you talked about how everything you were told made you not want to be a part of that story, right? And I think what the expression you used in the book was that whereas most people talk about making the audience the hero of the story, what a lot of church people do or church leaders do when they communicate is they make the audience the villain of the story. So everything that is wrong is you are causing it or you're an example of it. It's not, nobody likes to hear that.
No, and I kind of, yeah, and the story I kind of exaggerating, of course, but like the story I told a few minutes ago, like the story I heard when I was younger and you know, the power of, or like the effect of communication is what's being heard, not what being said, right? So that's the story most of my people of my age heard, and obviously didn't want to be a part of. So some have kind of had another experience with Christianity later in life, like me, but many haven't. But when I, as a grown up, was reintroduced to this message in a more authentic and I would say more clear way, then I was described, the story I was told then was I've got to be the hero of that story, because I was a repentant sinner. I had some struggles in my life. I was getting into a new phase. I full of uncertainty. I didn't know which way to go. And then I was invited into a story, fighting courageously against the evil within me and in my surroundings, with Jesus as my mentor, and kind of lots of stakes in the story, transformation of my identity. So kind of all the elements of a compelling story was a part of that story I was entering. And I think other people also are invited into that story. And once they approach and see the gospel as such a story, kind of taking a part in the epic fight against good and evil that we kind of all experience, actually. I believe that's a common experience, a human experience, that we have this strange doubleness within us. And we see it all over the place. We have a potential for doing good. We also have a great potential for doing evil. And that's how we are wired. And it's actually, I I understand the gospel as an invitation to take part, as joining a force for good, fixing a broken world, and also fixing myself. But I'm not left without help. I'm actually left with what I believe to be the most powerful guide that is there out there. So when I think about like the gospel in that way, it also makes sense from a kind of a storytelling understanding of stuff. And so I think that's one of the opportunities for the church to invite people into such a story, and obviously making people the villain of the story, like just like climate communicators do all the time. By the way, you should live more like this and this and this and this to save the planet. It's just like hearing the priest from my childhood. It's the same messaging, and it doesn't work. It really doesn't work.
Well, or anyone who's ever been in a relationship where you get nagged constantly about all the things that you're doing for a
part who wants to be a part of that.
Well, considering how many people get married and stay in unhappy marriages, plenty of people want to be part of it. Or can't be bothered doing anything to change it. Yeah, so one thing that and I'm trying to see what's the lesson or the takeaway for non-religious stories. But one thing that I think becomes an issue with Christianity in particular is how, to my mind, the more you base the argument on how true it is, knowing how many different things you're trying to say are true that might somehow strain credulity, the biggest chance that to people who are slightly more, I'm not going to say rational, but they're more, you know, guided by the, like, they're looking for the hole in the argument as a way out of actually dealing with the emotional content of it. You know, any message that has been around for thousands of years will run into that problem. So I think that even if we put aside things like resurrection or any of the more magical things, even the more basic stuff can be put to the challenge, just because I don't think it takes much to know that as a document, the Bible is very inconsistent because of how it was put together. So yes, parts of it might be easier to prove historically, but then you go, well, but this is the Bible. Yes, but there's parts of there that we know are not true. And from my not heathen point of view, I'm like, can we just like, yeah, sure, it's full of problems. Like no one is crazy to say that the whole thing is exactly as it says there, but can we focus on the important stuff, please? And I think that's true with any messaging, right? I think the more claims you make, the harder it is to maybe back them up. Whereas if you focus on the one thing that has emotional resonance, then it's always going to be true for the people it has emotional resonance to, right? If you feel grace or salvation, you feel it. Like, what can I say about that? That's not an argument I can have with you. So that's part of the, I think the challenge with messages that have all this cultural and historical baggage as well is it's difficult for you to say, can we just focus on the important stuff?
I see I get you. I mean, the whole Bible is, as I mean, 66 different books. Like, it's a whole library, like written in different periods of time or over the huge span of time and stuff. So, but I'm not one of those Christians who claim to like having an explanation for every existential question that all human beings have had for ages. That would be massively, I don't know. I wouldn't know what it would be.
Pretentious, I think.
Yeah.
Overconfident.
Sure. So that's, I mean, on the flip side though, if you have a philosophy evening or whatever and sit and try to make arguments for kind of huge, difficult questions like the problem of evil and stuff like that, is there only one true religion, all those kinds of huge questions, you have to remember that you're not, there is not an argument against like set of a Christian belief set, so you have to make an argument for that, versus rationality. Because it's actually it is an argument again between a Christian framework and understanding of the world, and which is a set of beliefs, and versus another set of beliefs, not provable, not scientifically provable sets of beliefs. So that is actually, for me, that's a crucial kind of premise for such debates. At least we have to be honest that, like, and I think it's a myth that, like, in a slightly post-Christian Western world today, that kind of didn't necessarily, there's a huge percentage of the millennials and at least Generation C that has grown up without knowing too much about the fundamental Bible stories, not to mention the gospel. They don't know why we celebrate Easter, like the religious part of that and stuff like that. So, but anyways, I think it's a myth that you can, having grown up in a post-Christian culture, you can your basis is a purely rational, kind of scientifically based, objective point of argument. That is not true. I mean, 5 minutes into a philosophical debate, you realize that we're actually discussing non-provable sets of beliefs. They're just different. So that's a fundamental basis for such discussions, for me at least. And I think that's maybe the kind of the new atheist movement that grew up for like 50 years ago and were very popular. 3 years into that movement, like, we have established that God is dead, but then now what?
But then I thought Nietzsche established that a long time before, the four horsemen of the atheism.
Yeah, the four horsemen were like not as strong as Nietzsche maybe, but at least Nietzsche said that we're just living in this Christian framework and we're not able to get out of it. So if you see that as a good thing or as a bad thing, it's your choice. But that was at least Nietzsche's claim. Even though he told that God is dead, we're still kind of fundamentally in a Western world living within a Christian framework, and at least a Christian ethical framework. So that is also a kind of a criticism. And I try to maybe provoke some people sometimes, because as I, lots of people say, I don't want anything with Christianity, but still they're based their life on Christian ideas. Like, for example, the inviolable human worth, which is a fundamentally Christian idea. So the question is, can you kind of trade? I don't know if such values can, if they're everlasting, if you'd kind of forget or kind of deny the source of it. I don't know. I'm concerned about that.
I think it's fair to say that given how most people would not be aware that those values have originally come from Christianity, taking the premise that they did, then you could argue that they already exist independently of the source. Because you ask most people, particularly of my generation or our generation, where have these things come from? And you get, you know, came from the Romans and the Greeks or whatever. You have to convince them that wasn't the case, that they came at least a great part from Christianity. So arguably, they already exist independently of the source. Now, would they continue to exist independently of the source 200 years down the line if the source was no longer a factor? I think, you know, we can't prove that one way or the other, but I think they have been dissociated. So which to me, from a communication point of view, would be more, even more of an argument to say, actually, you already like a lot of the stuff, but you're missing this one really good bit here that maybe we can talk about. But let me just ask you something very storytelling specific, as I know we're coming up to the end of the time we had. A lot of people love mentioning Jesus when they talk about storytelling, like the power of storytelling. So there's this line I use plenty of times, which is, if you don't want to preach, put stories in your speech. So the least preacher-like person in his communication ever was Jesus. He just told stories all the time. I make a connection from that might not be natural for everyone, which is, I think, okay, well, if you are within the church's universe, particularly if you're a pastor, a minister, someone who has to communicate to people all the time, you're just going to follow that example and tell stories all the time, even if you never make the connection that the stories don't all have to be from the Bible. But at least from the Bible, you have loads of stories and the example that you should be telling stories. But I get a feeling that most people that are in the church, if they tell stories, they are telling them, they're preaching stuff from the Bible, but not in a storytelling way. They might be referring to things, they might occasionally be sharing them, but I wouldn't think, based on how a lot of church people communicate, that I can see outside of it, that they haven't realized how much their founder bought into storytelling, and they're not following those lessons. Am I guessing that wrong?
No, I'll give you to at least to a certain extent right in what you're saying. I believe first I agree that Jesus was an excellent storyteller. I mean, he was really convincing in the way he met people, and it was very like the example he used was so. There was no like huge philosophical ideas and stuff like it. It was very down to earth and very directly into the lives of the people he met. So relatable in their time and to their lives. So that's kind of the shining bright example for preachers and priests today to try to mirror and learn from. And I agree that like because you know theology has caused a lot of problems for churches in their communication because theology is that's our human experiment or project to try to grasp God and understand God. And as long as you build layers upon layers on theology, it gets more, obviously, naturally, it gets more and more theoretical. You're removing yourself from the factual historical events and you're talking about a lot about theories about what that events mean. And that you can also do that about Jesus' stories, the parable of the prodigal son, the woman by the well, like really powerful stories. But as long as you do like a theoretical PhD kind of way of trying to understand those stories and not actually retell or try to tell similar kind of stories that kind of resonates with actual things that people observe around in their surroundings, then it's getting a little bit dry, hard to understand. And so I believe actually, even though theology was supposed to help us understand Jesus and who he was, I think it sometimes does the opposite. I think we don't see Jesus in all the theoretical theological arguments.
And I think that if you get the argument you just made and you replace theology by theory or abstraction and you replace Jesus by anything, like anything you want, that argument holds true. Because when you talk in theory or you know just pure statements or our understanding of this thing is this, it's dry and people don't tend to understand it. It's harder for them to pay attention. It's harder for them to be engaged by it, and it's harder for them to care about it. And that holds true for any communication in any sphere. And I think that when you are perhaps I'm just guessing here, when we're talking about religion, this might be even more true because there is a tendency to talk about things that are not considered by everybody or accepted by everybody as true. So you're not only talking about things that are already easier to challenge than other assertions, but you're also talking in the least effective way possible. Whereas I can tell you about my theory about marketing and, you know, there's nothing supernatural about it. You might think, I'm not sure, does that actually work? And then I give you an example or tell you a story and you go, oh, okay, I can see how that would work. But if you're talking about things that happened thousands of years ago to people that we've never met, doing things that sound slightly incredible, and you're doing it in a way that is very poor from a communications point of view, then you know you're just making your task a lot harder. So you know just tell more stories.
Yeah, tell more stories and tell relatable stories that actually resonates with real stuff that people observe in their surroundings, people that people actually care about. and actually find important in their lives. And that's absolutely possible. That is not so hard even, but you have to have the mindset. You have to have the willingness to do the job. You have to have the, even sometimes courage to go out there and communicate in that way to modern audiences. But I am obviously confident that Christian leaders have a core message that has the capacity to resonate really well with modern audiences. Is it just about doing the work and actually try to go back to the roots and see how the roots can be communicated to people today? And I truly believe it's more than possible. It's really, I think it's necessary.
Well, I know that I'm still a heathen. I think you're still pretty sure you're still a believer. But I also know that given the quality or lack thereof of the communication in this particular arena that you're working in, there's massive room for improvement. And I know that your message is starting to resonate. You're doing speeches about it. You're doing workshops. So it's, I think it's reaching fertile ground. How much anyone that doesn't care at all about the stuff we were talking about can take and put it into other areas of marketing, that's slightly more dubious in my mind, or perhaps we made too hard a job at it. But no, I'm cook. Knowing where you've come from and knowing the stuff that you were focused on for so long, I think this feels like a good fit. And this feels like, again, I don't think anyone, heathen or otherwise, would dislike church communication getting better. No. I think. And coming from a country and a family that is Christian, anything you can do to get people to do anything better than licking their thumbs and making crosses on my forehead to make a connection is an improvement in my book. All right, man. I know you've got to run. So thanks for the time. It was great having you here.
Thank you.
All right, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. Take care of yourselves. And until next time. I hope you enjoyed the show. And if you did, I'd love for you to subscribe and leave us a review or a rating on the Apple Podcasts app. It's very easy. You open the app and find this show. Then scroll down a little, and when you see the stars, tap. I'd really appreciate it, and it does help other people find us. And if you'd like to get in touch or find out more about what I do, reach out to me on LinkedIn or visit my website, storypowers.com.